Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Howdy.
And Jules Gill.
Hadley doodly, hadley, hadley.
Now, we are on the cusp of new hardware being demoed and being shown off if all the rumors and leaks and things are true this coming E3. It seems like Microsoft and Nintendo will be showing their new consoles. But that got us thinking as to, you know, when the change of a generation comes, we sort of think back on different tropes and different things that made themselves known across the last 6 years since 2013.
Yes.
It's flown by.
Yeah.
And so basically, we've just rounded up a whole bunch of things that we're sick of, that we just want to get rid of going into the next generation. This is our master list. So we threw our different ideas in. This one is one of Jules's, which is the idea of buying your way through games, which you see in NBA 2K.
Yeah, this
and whatever.
It's an obvious problem because it comes back to, like, you know, I'm not just some old curmudgeon. Like, the fact is that when we used to be kids, we used to have to just unlock game stuff. Like, Time Splitters was one of my favorite games growing up, and Time Splitters 2, you used to have to do so much to get, like, all the characters. Mm-hmm. That was part of the fun, because you go up to your mates and be like, say you're playing Tekken 3 and you're like, how do you unlock this guy? How do you unlock
this?
You got the kangaroo with the boxing gloves, and be like, you got to do this and that, and then everyone's like, oh, it's brilliant. Nowadays, it's just kind of like,
well, I just went into my dad's wallet and I got his credit card out and I paid $15.99 and now I have everything.
And now I bought the virtual currency, and the virtual currency allowed me to buy it, and I can't change the virtual currency back because the money that I spent was £20, but the character only cost £17. That means I've got £3 left in the game, but I can't trade it back out.
Well, that's the thing, then they've got you for the next purchase. You might want to buy some more skins or
I've set out in the fiver so that I can get something else in.
What do you think of this stuff?
Having it as a progression system to actually progress through the game, make it easier for you to continue, it sucks.
Like, just that, like, you've already spent the money buying the game, and it's like, well, why do you want to buy your way through the thing that you bought?
If you're not willing to play the game properly, why buy it in the first place?
Now, we do have to make it like a distinction, though, because I'm just saying that, like, I don't have a problem with games that are like, if you play the game like a fighting game and it gives you currency every time you win a fight, and you can use that to go and, like, buy a thing that you know, a known quantity from the in-game store or crypt or whatever they've got going on. That's fine, because that is effectively a progression that you are choosing yourself as the path that you would do normally.
Yeah.
If somebody told me, hey, you unlock this guy in 007 Nightfire or something like that by doing this, I'd be like, okay, that's the path I'm going to take. It's the same path, just disguised a bit, more lazily, I'd say. But if you're just there like going, hey, you can't unlock these people in any other way than by buying them, and there is no sort of grind whatsoever at all. You have to buy them because they cost so bloody
much.
Either that
or the grind is so ridiculous, you may as well buy them.
Then I will throw alongside, the idea of, like, paying to bypass grinds absolutely sucks. I also think that having the ability to just buy abilities that you could unlock in the game if you just played it, I think that's a weird decentralizing thing that I just don't see the point of.
Like, big and great titles like Spider-Man had a weird sort of pre-order incentive when it was like, you pre-order it and you got the three suits already. But the suits obviously come with powers, so that does affect your gameplay, and also,
and you get them early on, but the difference is with Spider-Man, you do unlock everything through the game anyway.
It did
concern me, because I was really excited for Spider-Man when it said, hey, you get the Iron Spider from Infinity War. It's like, oh, that sounds awesome. But it's like, am I going to get this buying the bog standard edition of the game post-launch? And thankfully you did.
Mm-hmm. But one thing it did include was, it goes, oh, here's like 5 or 6 extra skill points. Now that bugged me, because of the fact that what you're doing is, from the start of the game, you're you're effectively saying the character starts at like level 6 or level 7. Yeah. Now that will throw off game balance. Like I know it didn't do it as much in that game particularly, but if it was say an RPG or a good example, Tales of Vesperia, that allowed you to buy levels for your character.
Yeah.
You could buy 5 extra levels for £3 and another 5 levels for £6.
It was funnily enough, actually, yesterday I started playing Warhammer Chaosbane.
Oh yeah.
And one of the pre-order bonuses, which you can actually buy as just a normal purchase now on Steam, it's like $1.99 for a X percent XP buff.
Right.
For the certain few, for a first couple of levels, so you can power through the first few levels.
But that just removes the whole point of playing the game.
And then when when I bought, I pre-ordered Call of Duty World War II last year, that gave you a permanent unlock token that you only get when you prestige in the normal progression. You got that straight away. So as soon as I played the game, I was level 1, I could go and unlock the M1 Garand that was like level 15. So I had the M1 Garand from launch. So I could have gone and got the level 55 weapon you unlock. It's basically, think about booting Modern Warfare 2 for the first time and having the AK-47 at level 1.
Right.
It was like that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a weird thing because I think it has permeated a lot of the AAA stuff. Like for me, there's a thing you can buy in Devil May Cry 5 that just unlocks everything for you. There's like, you can buy like crit passes and stuff. Or you can buy the different...
Easy fatalities.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. Easy fatalities. It's that idea of bypassing stuff. It's weird because I don't like, if you just have money to burn, then you can have it to burn. So my like solution, quote unquote, is like you kind of meet them in the middle. You can have some things that you can buy your way towards, like certain premium currencies. My whole thing with it, using it online as well, is just give those players a separate playlist. Let them have their like, you know, money throwing playlist where like they've bought their way to all these different guns. You know, how much money and guns are you bringing to the table? Well, I've bought this much.
Yeah,
and whatever. I mean, siphon that stuff off.
You have like DLC playlists and stuff like that. So why won't you have it with sort of like, if you've bought a gun or if you're using a thing that's from that, why don't you put into
the whale playlist?
Playlist.
Yeah,
just trying to think about how I can turn it into a pun.
At some point, I would have to assume that they'll find a way to do that because it just keeps annoying people like us who want to have like, you know, designated progressions and worthwhile, you know, unlock loops and everything versus just bypassing it.
There was an interview that was, I can't remember where I read it actually, but there was one of these developers that had spent so much time on working with the AAA thing, and it was like the whole title was like, I'm never going to work for these people again or whatever. And it was just like, well, I and my team spent all this time making this game. We balanced it. We come up with the perfect progression loop. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get that gameplay loop instilled in players so they know what we're trying to achieve and what the end game is. And then about 3 months away from launch, the developers walked, or the publishers walked in, had a meeting and just said, right, so what are we going to give people who pre-order it? And they were like, well, we can give them skins, stuff like that. No. Give them like level progressions. Give them stuff like that. Like, well, that's going to throw off our entire sort of like gameplay.
Was that on Deus Ex?
It might have been actually.
That was Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Yeah, because then it would be basically just like, here's some powers that are so incredibly useful. Mm-hmm. You will probably use nothing else other than these powers, and you can have it straight away. Mm-hmm. Well, then you've completely undone the subtle ecosystem that was going on,
the whole
like trying to learn which elements of your character you want to build.
Mm-hmm. I think those can be like that, and plus getting to the end of those games in Deus Ex's case or something like that. You want to get to the end and you're fully equipped. You've actually been on that journey. You've got somewhere. It's worthwhile and memorable. The second you buy your way through that, I just don't...
It loses
that's a different
all
mentality altogether, yeah. So.
Well, it also artificially inflates what a game is worth, because then you'll have publishers staring at you going, right, okay, we haven't actually increased the cost of games in about 10 years. Mm. We've kept it at £40 to £45 or dollars, whatever it's going to be. We've kept it the same, so we're doing you a favor. But by doing that and just saying, well, we're going to buy your way, you're actually artificially in the game doesn't cost 45, it costs 50, 60, 70, depending on how much you're plugging into it.
And all those random figures, and we talked about it on the last podcast, which hopefully you can go and check out. It's just all those inflated figures based on live services or based on random numbers and stuff don't provide a solid foundation for the industry to subsist on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, those things fluctuate so much that you end up with mass layoffs and everything else. And the next thing down, which is one of Rich's, is the idea of cosmetic pre-order bonuses in single-player games.
Yeah, so we've seen it's so dumb.
So for the examples you gave were, you got Death Stranding coming up with the different things you can buy, the glasses,
the gold plated stuff,
gold plated
shield, pre-order rubbish,
thigh shields.
I can't wait for him to just be like Norman Reedus, to just be there like, this baby is so important, man, and I really need it. It's like, it'd be easy to take you seriously if you weren't wearing like solid gold specs at the time,
like Elton John style spikes on the side. You also put down Deus Ex, which you mentioned, and Rage 2. Rage 2 totally stuck out to me because that doesn't have any multiplayer. You're not even visible at all.
What's Rage 2's pre-order one then?
It's cosmetic,
it was just cosmetic, like, because they have this whole it's not to you. It's interesting. It's not because it's not your character, I don't think. It's like your vehicle skins and your
gun skins.
And through playing the game, putting like 8-10 hours into it, I didn't unlock any weapon skins in actual progression. I mean, I barely unlocked anything in that game, let's face it. But all of this stuff that gets added in is like, hey, I have a pre-order bonus of stuff that, you know, you don't need. I mean, God of War kind of suffered from the same thing as well, because it was like, hey, you pre-order, you get some fancy shields and stuff. And it's like, who cares? What?
So why? Did they have any sort of gameplay benefit? Nope. Where they literally could
cosmetic. I remember it's like you can show it off if you're on, if you make YouTube videos, if you're on Twitch, like, hey, look at my single player stuff. In the grand scheme of things, you're looking at it yourself and thinking, yeah, that's worthwhile purchase for me to look at.
But it's just like, that's the thing. It's an offline single player game.
It's just like, I understand, like, if I want a pre-order bonus in a single player game, it would either be access to DLC, like, without paying the extra, like kind of like a season pass, but like a, you know, like they do a Game of the Year edition where you get the season pass built in or whatever it might be. That's the kind of thing I'd be okay with, or something physical, not something that you'd expect from a multiplayer game to show off. Look at how good I am. Look at my diamond AK-47. But it's like, but this is a single player game. Why does it need to be there? And why are people so thick to buy this?
But why can't I just get it for free? Like, you know, like,
I'm gonna just piggyback off of that and say that the falsity of how much value is placed on cosmetic items is really interesting and probably would make for like a good video further down the line. But it's just, take the game Evolve. Now, Evolve, when it was going up for pre-order, it said that if you pre-ordered this super special edition, you will get, I think it was $80 to $100 worth of extra content. Mm-hmm. Now, somebody was like, okay, fine, what do you actually get in this? And you get one new monster, and you get a ton of skins. And when they actually like broke down the thing, they were like, okay, well, if the monster costs $20, you're saying that these skins that do not take that much time to program into the game are worth, to you, $10 each. And when you actually break it down like that, you're like...
A quarter of a full price game.
And you're like, that makes no sense, because, like, how do they determine what is charged for this? And, like, these Rage 2 things, they would probably go to you and say, like, well, buddy, we are actually saving you $50, because that's what we would have priced it as. But no one would
think.
The thing
is, like I said, I didn't come across any means of getting new skins and stuff in casual gameplay of Rage 2, but also because it's a single-player ecosystem, there's no marketplace for selling and buying and selling.
I've
bought and sold skins for Team Fortress, for PUBG, stuff like that on Steam before, and actually made like some pretty good money from it in the past based on pure luck on opening crates.
Don't you have a banana hat?
I have a banana hat that's worth 40 quid in TF2, and no, I'm not selling it.
At least that's an economy, though.
But it's got an economy. There is a reason behind these things being worth money, but in a single player ecosystem, there's literally no point.
I remember
it's like, I think it's more potentially the publisher side going, oh, you know, we need pre order stuff, like Deus Ex. And literally the easiest thing for them to do is go, skins then, because all you have to do is change a texture color and that's it, and we can charge more for it.
Hell, if they've even got the right sort of sponsorship deals, they could have it so that you're wearing another company's sort of colors
and you're paying Street Fighter 5.
I was about to say Street Fighter 5,
And you're paying for the privilege of it.
I just like that. I remember when Gears of War 3 brought in the different weapon skins that you could pay for and pre-order for, and I remember at the time everyone just sort of laughed at it because it was ridiculous. I was like, well, why would you pay for a golden lancer or whatever? But then they kind of get put into these games, and I think it is just, for me, it feels like this corporate box that needs to be ticked in terms of, we need a recurrent spending model, what can we have? Well, a skin store.
I think it's because I always look at things like Team Fortress 2 and CSGO being the origins of video game loot box ecosystem economy kind of things, because I think they were introduced way before it all became in the mainstream, and no one really, as much as you look at it and you think, oh, this looks a bit questionable, no one really batted an eyelid.
It's probably why
I bought into the Team Fortress 2 one, because I knew that it was not done with scummy, let's make loads of money practices behind it. It was more just a case of, yes, I get cool weapons.
And I think like, that way of it like supplanting the overall, you know, the budget for the game in the first place, like that's obviously the saving grace of it, is that it does help developers recoup some funds if their budgets were out of control or whatever it is. But it's just that idea that, like you said, like there's no meaningful ecosystem to it. It doesn't need to be there. It just reminds you of how these things used to be free in the past.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel right.
That was progression. That was a grind to
it. Yeah. Like it would just be an unlock thing. You do complete the game 100%, unlock a gold skin.
You'll get a skin.
It's like bringing Call of Duty up again. Like even they still, since, what did I say, COD 4, they still have the means of getting headshots to get more camos as time goes on. Yes, they've got all the black market ones in, but that original unlocking skins through progression is actually still there, which I think gets massively overlooked in modern Call of Duty. But in games where you'd expect to be able to unlock stuff, like I said, Rage 2, I got nothing. All my weapons look bare, and admittedly, it doesn't really matter. Who cares what my weapon looks like?
But
it was only me playing
that.
I wasn't playing on Twitch.
That's a good point. If you're being told that you can customize it and you go crazy and do all these other things, but they don't give you a chance to do it apart from buying or pre-ordering, then that's kind of a falsity.
We can pivot into overall microtransactions and loot systems. This one's from me and Rich, but Rich, you were saying that microtransactions and loot systems amongst narrative or gameplay, like Anthem, Storefront for cosmetics, and through Mortal Kombat as well.
The first point of Anthem, because I mean, you know, we didn't have high expectations for it, but like, as we've said, it plays incredibly well. Mm-hmm. But then the first proper point when I went, oh no, is when it goes, go and speak to this guy in the, it was like a marketplace, but yeah. It looks more just like a general marketplace within a world, not mm-hmm. like this is the marketplace. And you waltz over to him and he goes, hey man, yeah, you know what? You know, you're going to look like crap if you don't buy all this stuff behind me.
That's basically,
have you played it, Jules?
No, I didn't.
That's basically exactly what he says.
Yeah, he literally says, time to make a statement.
Yeah, you need to make a statement with your javelin. And it's like, are you kidding? It's like, yes, I know there's a loot box and microtransaction system here, but don't put it right there. I think you said on the podcast the other day that if he put it off to the side and then you put the thing of like, are you sure, you know, you're going to waste money here?
Yeah,
like, I think that's more, it's out of the way. But because they turn around and go, in the narrative, you literally can't skip it. They go, here's a microtransaction store, go and pay for it or you'll look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's that phrasing that really bothers me, because that's what
I... Do you want to make a statement?
Yeah, I'd consider that to be a predatory sort of mechanic, because you're basically, you're inferring to the player then that you aren't going to get anything good unless you buy it, and you're going to get made fun of, and you're not going to be as cool if you don't. Like, it's we have to go from the perspective of, we are all, like, you know, adults now.
Yeah.
However, the majority of players, they are going to be far younger than us. I always forget this, like, sometimes.
It depends
on the
game.
And they are going to be more impressionable. I'm not saying that they're stupid. I'm not saying that we don't fall for tricks like that as well. But still, they are more impressionable.
It's like, on Fortnite's terms, there's a... I can't remember what it's called. I think it's when people are called normies, when they use the base skins of the characters
in Fortnite.
So it's
almost like an insult.
Yeah. And it's like, I could just imagine a kid on a playground being left alone, not because he does something out of school that people find weird, like I did dancing at school and that made me an outcast, but because he uses a default skin in Fortnite, it's like, that's...
Maybe.
And because they're saying, like, you don't look good playing this game unless you pay money and buy some skins, it's like, that's what these companies are
pushing
through
the
to the kids. And it's like, that is going to make such an impression on the rest of the future of the industry, because of, like, the... kids assuming they can buy their way through things, because that's apparently how games are. A YouTube channel called Extra Credits did a fantastic thing about the future of game developers. The kids that grew up playing Minecraft and knowing that you get stuff by your own graft in the game, and then how they would translate that to the potential future of games, and then the generation straight after that, because there's always that Minecraft, then it was Fortnite. Those Fortnite kids are going to grow up making games thinking, oh wait, we need to add in some kind of system so people can just skip this.
I mean, it comes down to the thing of, like, you imitate what you were brought up with a lot of the time, even without you, like, thinking about it. And you will find, like you say, developers of those kids that were playing Fortnite probably making games that just go, like, well, it was in the games I remember
Where's the battle pass?
And the more it permeates, the more it repeats itself, the more it permeates, and then it will become part of the social norm. Like,
one of the reasons why we want it to die this generation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That was, like, all the bigger tier companies, the EAs, the Activisions, are pushing for these things and have been in so many games so egregiously, so that they can create a generation of gamers that actively looks for this stuff and actively looks to spend money on you know, premium currencies and whatever else. For the most part, they've succeeded, like, in getting these currencies into as many games as possible. But I do think that I think at the minute there's a slight pushback ever since Battlefront 2. The fact that you've got American legislation coming in to ban loot boxes,
and there's a lot of games now actually making the effort not to do that anymore. Even Activision aren't doing it. They're doing free DLC for Modern Warfare, but they're starting to look.
They're trying to find a middle ground. But
but there is an interesting thing to note. One thing that we might not have really detailed, which is, Take, what's the one that's been doing the rounds of them? Apex Legends.
Yeah.
Right. Everyone said that was, like, a massive sort of, like, shift, because not only did it take the Battle Royale formula, but it was, like, free to play. It was doing things right. And to be fair, all of us have agreed it's a great game and it plays really well, and it deals with the sort of progression, sort of, like, and microtransactions pretty well.
You pick and choose what you want.
However, the player base has dropped off by about 75% since the initial launch window that was there for the first 2 months.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And Fortnite hasn't really dipped in the slightest, so it shows which one is more sustainable even in that front.
In that particular example, Apex has dropped off because Respawn have said that they want to prioritize the devs, and they were responding to the crunch culture stuff. So they said, like, we're not going to, like, force ourselves to put stuff out every day in, day out, week in, week out, as opposed to all the reports from Fortnite that those staff are, like, working ridiculous
but
hours each
week.
But there
is constant stuff coming out, and that's the thing. There is an ADHD generation that do not have the attention span to stick with anything else.
Exactly,
you need to be told that there is a new thing coming every single week. Like, I mean, look at Rocket League. Rocket League has definitely hit its stride with the ball.
Hit
of
the
thing.
Goal.
Yeah, hit a home run and five basket points.
Corner flags.
Yeah, offside. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think something like that, it's interesting to see how it goes, because like you said, that you have that constant expectation. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it all ties in together, because that idea of recurrent spending methods, like the idea of daily goals and daily check-ins and daily missions, like that is all for that assumption that you're going to keep coming back constantly.
But that's where games as a service comes in.
Yeah, but it devalues the initial purchase and puts the money elsewhere. Whereas I would rather, as a consumer, I would rather know what I'm buying up front and not have to rely on services going forward. For example, Anthem has completely fell apart, and Bungie have deleted its roadmap now, so you can't see what's coming in the future.
Because
it's clearly just falling apart.
That's a pretty good segue into one of my other
points. Well, the next one I've got down is, you want to go into time exclusivity?
No, I mentioned about roadmaps.
Yes, we can go into roadmaps and games as a service. Mm-hmm. The idea of pretty much everything trying to pretend it's a games as a service.
Yeah.
Even though the vast majority of the content isn't locked in at launch, and they try and it's like the Wallace and Gromit, he's forever putting the train tracks down as he's flying down at full speed.
You can't really react to something until you've actually started implementing. So a roadmap is like, you'll learn this when you do like marketing strategies and stuff like that. It is the most pointless thing to do. You go in there to a client, you sit down with them, and they ask you what are you going to do with them for a full year if you're like a consultant or something. Mm. And you sit down and you go, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try and like raise this, do that. And they go, cool, how? And it's like, well, you have to take it month by month, because if you start just saying we're going to do this 6-month projection plan and it's not hit, things could change in the first week that will completely derail it. But the moment that you promise it, that's when you start failing. You never promise anything, kids. Never promise anything. Not to your partner.
I was going to say, that's to your loved ones. But that's the thing. I mean, the examples we've got down are Fallout 76, Rage 2. Like, I mean, there's pretty much every single game, like the newest Assassin's Creed, Mortal Kombat turned itself into a games as a service. Sometimes I don't mind the idea of checking in with something day in, day out if it's handled well and I feel like I'm respected as a consumer. Like, I'm checking into Mortal Kombat pretty much every day because they offer different skins every day. I'm not massive on that particular idea, but I like the idea of playing some Mortal Kombat every day. I think Rocket League's nailed it as well.
Yeah.
But that proliferation of games as a service, it can't work on as a whole industry. Not every game. We can't play everything every day.
The reason why I kind of brought up the roadmap stuff is because of things like Fallout 76, because, of course, there was the interview with Todd Howard. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, you know, we were launching a game that wasn't ready, and the roadmap was the rest of the game being built, and that's expectation that publishers and developers can release a game. Basically, it was an early access game, game. Because roadmaps, and this is what we're going to get to, is an early access thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you play a game that's been made by four people, and it's brilliant, and you know for a fact it's going to be a slow development. Playing something like Factorio on Steam, that's incredible, and it's got this roadmap and everything set out for it. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't expect that from a AAA developer.
That stuff actively annoys me. Like the Todd Howard stuff, when he was like, it wasn't about what Fallout 76 was at launch, it was about what it would become. And that's not a way to run something on that
it's
scale.
Like, you should,
with that
roadmap that you've put out, kind of the same with Rage 2, the first half of that roadmap. It's like, that stuff you should have put into the main development and given it another two or three months in the oven and then brought it out, rather than just say, here it is now. It's basically early access, but we're not going to call it early access.
You want your money now, and we'll give
wait
you
until what the
later.
Game becomes. It's like, oh, you know, I have defended Fallout 76 in the past. It's like, yes, it could become something a lot better than it was originally, but it should have been that first, even if the first time we got our hands on it was later this year, not last year.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because of different cultures between the console culture and PC culture as well. If they came out and said that Fallout 76 was going into early access, it would have been probably much better received.
I would say so.
Because an early access tag has bought publishers the world over so much wiggle room to just be like, look, our game is absolute crap at the moment. Like, DayZ was in early access for what, 3 years or something?
DayZ's only just released on PS4 now, and nobody cares anymore.
But that's the thing. Like, they allowed them to just basically just get people playing, investing into that thing, using the money to make improvements down the line, but they didn't have to promise anything. They said at the front, you're buying into a game that is effectively a glorified demo. And if they'd done that with Fallout 76, bet you anything, people would be much...
Oh, absolutely. That would, for the most part, solve it.
For me, but do you see that the problem is there? It's just a tag. Yeah. Calling something a games as service and early access, they're the same bloody thing.
Well, for the most part, I mean, games as a service is supposed to speak to a rollout of premium content that's all been professionally prepared to drop at certain times.
So is early access.
Well, no, early access is the opposite.
Early access is saying we're going to finish the game. And effectively, as games as a service is saying we're going to finish the game.
A roadmap is a TV season, whereas I view early access as like a making of.
I think that's an interesting conversation for potentially another time, is where do you draw the line with like whereabouts in the hierarchy of the industry you can draw the this is acceptable for you to call this early access line. Because when you look at, like I said, you've got games like Factorio, things like PUBG when it first released, things like Satisfactory, which was closed alpha and early access, they're games that are being produced, people who would need that feedback, companies that couldn't afford a big old Q&A team, whereas Bethesda, Activision, EA, they'll have this ridiculous and it's like, that's your early access. Yeah. That's your beta. Use them. Don't just sell this out to the public and make X number of million dollars a few months earlier.
Yeah, like we're not their testers.
Yeah, exactly. Feeling like you're being used as a QA tester for the AAA market, it feels really bad for us because it feels like we're being sold rubbish games, which is absolutely the case. But in an indie side of things, it's more acceptable for me if I saw a tiny studio making a brand new game, hence why I was so involved in Satisfactory, because it's like, this game looks incredible, but they want help making it. I am on board with that.
I'm totally, totally for redefining the refunds policy window for different companies. I feel like if you are a company like Bethesda, Microsoft, and that, you should have a longer refund policy window, because you have more disposable income and more sort of people working on a thing to make sure that the game is as a higher quality as you want. And I feel like if you are a consumer buying into that and you're buying into their brand loyalty by their name alone, you should have a greater window to refund and return their games, whereas in like an indie one, I feel like maybe, like you say, you can't really afford all the people. You are telling people that it's going to be as and when they come
out
improvements.
Like, communication is key. Like, it seems to be the thing that, and for the most part, the bigger the studio, or in those examples, Bethesda or, like, I don't know, Activision or EA or whatever, that they haven't, something like Mass Effect Andromeda, it wasn't exactly communicated just what state that thing was in at launch until the reviews came out and we kind of found out. But because those things aren't nailed down, it gives them such a window to sort of, I don't know, just exploit the consumer base, and they cash in first, and then the product never really arrives. But if you communicated up front, like with Fallout 76, like, hey, we're trying something new and it's going to take a few months, but hey, you can come in on board now.
Yeah.
Like that communication is key, because that's the thing that differentiates the indie studios and the honesty with the corporate side of it and the cashing in with it.
I really think as well, like, there are just simple things that they can do to fix this games as a service thing. Like, if you're going to buy in early, if you're buying in on the ground floor, offer like a $5 or something discount.
That's why things like Siege have done so well, because I got Siege for 15 quid. Yeah, because it was a super duper baseline. Yes, you got like three operators, but it meant I could play the game without having to cough up loads of money for it.
Do it like that, and then you can add in the content that you want to build the game that you want.
Because like Anthem had like 17 different tiers of game you could get based on when you can actually start playing
it. So
but they all started they all started at $60. It's like, start it at 20, 25. Like, if a £25 game comes out, that's got my interest way more than something that's $60, doesn't look any better anymore, any further along or anything like that.
Also, that Anthem example, they offered the, you could play it like 2 days early on the EA Origin thing, which obviously you spend more to do that, or you pay more for the deluxe edition that got you in earlier, which got you an even more broken earlier access version of the game.
Which is so bizarre, isn't it?
We've completely conflated early access with the games as a service, the premium edition, the deluxe edition. Yeah. Like, earlier isn't better.
No.
Like,
no.
It just means you're getting a worse version.
I'm honestly really surprised that not more companies have looked at Valve between late 90s and like like the 2010s or early 2010s, because like Valve time is a thing we all know about. Yeah. And it's like, if the game's not ready, it's not finished, we're not going to put it out.
That's what CD Projekt were doing first.
Exactly. That's what that's why we heard about Death Stranding for the first time in, what, 2017? And only the other week do we now know when it's coming out. It's because, yes, it's in people's consciousness. I think doing it like Nintendo did with Metroid Prime 4 and just like, oh, it's in development, by the way. Like, that's probably a bit too early. That, but it's like, if they're going to, I'd rather wait longer for a game to come out and be ready. Mm-hmm. That's why I've said like Fallout 76 would have been better if they gave it another year.
I think everybody would just totally buy that. Like, it's because they keep selling this idea of like, it can come for you quicker, we can give you the adverts and it can be with you in the next few months.
I get being on the hype train. It's like, if I could have a build of Half-Life 3 with all the developers extra still on, I'll play it. But it's like, that shouldn't be offered. That's the thing.
The problem is with the hype train is as well, is that people again often forget that it's a classic case of like supply and demand just with information. Mm-hmm. If Scott is really hyped for the new Shovel Knight game, right, I'm going to make him wait even
King
longer
coming
for
out soon,
it.
By the way.
I'm going to make him wait even longer for it. Because the whole point is that I'm not going to put out something that would be broken or easy just because I want his $15 right now. I want him his $15 and his critical appraise, which makes my next project even better.
Yep. There
is very few companies that are working to the crunch where, like, when you hear Bethesda or even Sony just saying like, no, we had to get it out then. It had to be out. That was our deadline. It's like,
you're the top of the pile. Yeah.
Like, your deadline means absolutely jack. Like you could push it back, and just because your profit margin might be hit a slight.
That's what EA always
like Days Gone as an example. That got delayed like 2-3 times.
Yes.
And
which is good in Sony's part.
It's good. Yeah. Like, it turned out actually being pretty good. And it's like, imagine if that did release when they initially said it was going to come out. Imagine what state that would have been in when it came out. It would have been critically panned.
Contrast to Mass Effect Andromeda, where EA like really they needed it to hit that fiscal year, so it just got shipped.
I sent a game to Josh the other day. Actually, it was like about this vampire game, and what had happened is that loads of people had written into the publisher saying, "Oh, it doesn't look that great. It's a Castlevania style game. Like, we don't like the graphics that much." And then the video announcement thing was the director of it just going like, "Look, I listened to all
that's Bloodstained, Ritual of the Night."
You guys, I guess I listened to it, and I really appreciate your feedback. So what I did was I've just rehauled the entire graphics engine. We've done the whole thing again. We're doing it again because we want to release this right. And I'm like, now that has got my interest and it's going to probably get my wallet singing more than it would be just for like, just check it out.
But that element of communication, like, that's a weird, that's a good example. For me, that's weird because he did just kowtow to the angry fans, but it kind of resulted in a good looking game. So whatever, it's like a weird little anomaly, but it's a good exemplification of communication.
Yeah.
That like, you have that fan base that are responding, and you're responding to it as the developer, as the creator.
Because right then and there, you have not only hooked people back in because like an apology and stuff like that, it will redeem you with the fans who were angry with the first sort of thing. But it then means that they're going to be more likely to follow through with purchasing it for at the end of the day, because they'll remember in their minds, oh, this is a guy who I feel like I can trust.
Yeah.
And it's all about consumer loyalty.
One thing, because we can pivot, because I think this is a really good topic. We can pivot a little bit more into the idea of believing in the creator and not the formula or not the company.
Because we talked about this before, didn't we? Like, talking about Corey Barlog and people that, where you've got the people at the top who you know, who you can see, and you feel like you can go and hug him.
But
and
I think
it's just like, when you see that person in front of a game, you think, yeah, they know what they're doing.
Well, that's my thing. I think this generation, we've seen a reduction of the creators, of the auteurs. Like, you know the companies more than the people. Whereas, I mean, Hideo Kojima's coming back with Death Stranding. Ken Levine will assumedly be returning with whatever he's doing. You know, you have people like Corey Barlog, and if you go in the indie sphere, there's an absolute ton, from Eric Baroni to Tim Fox or whatever. But like, there's an absolute ton, and it's just like, I think they've moved away. Whereas in the film industry and in Hollywood, you know film directors and you know what you're investing into.
Yeah.
It's not as faceless and corporate, and it's not all about pushing things out early to cash in on it. The personality of gaming, I want that to come back next generation.
Why do you think that Nintendo has, air quotes, won E3 for the last couple of years? It isn't because of their quality.
My boy Reggie.
It's because
my boy Reggie Fils-Aimé.
Do you know why?
Xbox has Phil Spencer now.
It's very true, like they do, but it's just, he definitely was at the forefront of being like, hey, look, there's no chance why I can't just be a person who works in the company and a fan of my own company.
People love Miyamoto.
And that's why when people love Miyamoto, that's why when Satoru Iwata passed away, the entire industry was in mourning. When Reggie retired and everyone was absolutely bawling. Mm-hmm. It's like, these people have a really big impact on gamers' lives and how they see the industry. And it's why Nintendo have been so successful.
And it's also why, when you get into that state and you are that sort of prolific and attached to that company, when you say, Hey, by the way, we've got Animal Crossing coming out. People are going to be like, oh, Reggie said Animal Crossing coming out. I want to get Animal Crossing, man.
I just remember we're going to see Doug Bowser at E3 and not Reggie.
I love that Nintendo's new dude is called Doug Bowser.
Can
we have Reggie do like Stan Lee cameos in every single Nintendo Direct? Because I'd be so down for that.
I mean, they clearly will.
This is the thing. They have to open it out with like the classic Super Mario Brothers going along, getting to the thing, and then Doug Bowser walking in and go, whoa. I'm not having it.
It's my time now.
And he like pulls the axe lever or something like that. It's like,
But I think a couple of the examples that I had down, because I think we've already gone for like half an hour or whatever, but some of the examples I had down for, you know, big studios doing smaller games is like the Ubi Art Initiative, mm-hmm. which gave us Valiant Hearts and the Child of Light. Yep. And you had EA, they've launched their EA Originals thing, which gave us A Way Out. And I forget what their next one is.
Unravel.
Yes, Unravel as well. And they have another new one. But like, yeah, but you have these bigger teams just saying like, look, we can do like, you know, like sort of B tier, like, you know, like good visually represented, mm-hmm. like well-rendered
like,
games.
Ori from Microsoft as well.
Yeah. And it's like that came from like Moon Studio, and it's just like
they need to keep doing that.
Those massive games as a service, these labyrinthine like behemoths that like just kind of quake and shiver, and we never really know what their like full worth is, and they sort of they can collapse on again like, in a nighttime. Like those things, I don't think are the future of the industry. Whereas I think putting money into the creator's vision, restoring the personality, the authorship, like you know that's the lifeblood of the industry, and it always was. I just think it's weird that this generation's kind of experimented with more corporate minded mentalities, but I think that's the thing that has to die, and the thing that has to come back is the creative influence.
It's because video games as an entire medium have become more accessible across the board. Like now I would say that there are more people who are interested or at least have a vested interest in video game than ever before. Mm-hmm. And as that changes, so too does the social acceptances of what is popular mm-hmm. and what is that. There is a reason why Transformers makes a silly amount of money. There is a reason why Fast and the Furious makes a ton of money. Everyone knows that they are dumb, but they buy them anyway because it is entertainment. And unfortunately, gaming principles have changed so that they will chase the dumb cash rather than the small, maybe more intellectual dollar.
I wonder how much a lot of the corporate side of it wants to return to the age of the arcade, where it's just you put the money in, you play for a bit, it's throwaway, and you're done. Like, you know, obviously franchises came out of the arcades, but they're a handful compared to the amount of arcade games that were there at the time. Like, yes, we have Pac-Man or whatever. But, like, yeah, I think they kind of want to get back to that, which kind of just makes me, like, question whether things like, you know, fully rendered stories and narrative and all that kind of thing, whether if that was just this weird experiment and they want to go back to, you know, is the ultimate end game of the biggest part of the gaming industry serving a bigger arcade than ever?
All I'm saying is that I'm looking forward to one of the games I'm looking forward to the most this year is a 2D side-scrolling Dark Souls-esque thing called Blasphemous. And I am so looking forward to that more than any other high-budget E3 thing.
You said
thing.
Shovel Knight DLC really weirdly there.
No. Although, when that comes out and they fully release the final thing, I will get it and I will play it for
Good.
You.
I hope that you will. We might revisit this because after E3 we'll know what we're dealing with in terms of the new Xbox stuff and the Nintendo stuff, if it's all true. For now though, this has just been a roundup of all of our biggest complainy things, complain cast for the current generation. Let us know your thoughts down in the comments below if you're on the video side, or come find us on social media if you're listening on any audio platforms. For now though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening.
And Jules Gill.
Before I go, I just want to say that we will be doing the live stream of the E3 coverage, and it's going to be starting on Sunday, our time, at 9 p.m. BST. At your time, it'll probably be very, very different.
I think it's 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. And it's going to be Scott and I doing the
We're Microsoft, doing Microsoft together
and
for 2 hours.
We're also doing...
You two are also doing Bethesda.
Bethesda yep. as
We're going to
well.
Stay up until 2 in the morning for Bethesda. Good luck. Half past 1.
Lucky you.
I'll be doing Ubisoft with Ewan mm-hmm. on Monday night at 9 p.m. BST, and also doing Nintendo at 5 o'clock BST on Tuesday with Rach.
And we will round up whatever happens at Square Enix somewhere in the middle of that.
We'll do lots of roundups of all the other stuff because we know we've missed out PC Gaming Show, Square Enix, EA, all this sort of thing.
PC Gaming Show, sponsored
by Epic.
Ooh. It'll be fun, but we'll catch you next week. But thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you then.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree.
That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.